listening to 90.7 The Capstone. This is Fit to Be Tied with Whitney and John. We hope that everyone had an awesome week and looking forward to another awesome week.
Yes, great to be back with you after a little two-week layoff. Took a little break last week to enjoy some University of Alabama gymnastics and a good weekend in University of Alabama sports, getting a lot of things kicked off this time of year with all the spring sports starting. We had a couple of gymnastics meets last week and got off to a good start with softball down in Orlando, and it's looking like baseball starting up this week, so it's getting to be that fun time of year again.
Roll Tide. Maybe a little stress-free now, maybe not. Maybe with the pretty weather outside, people can get out and run and walk and ride their bikes and get a little physical activity in.
Yeah, at least for now, it's kind of starting to look like or feel like time for some spring sports. So who knows how long it will last, but it looks like we have a pretty week ahead of us. Hopefully we can get in some baseball games, some softball games, and some of those spring sports that we all enjoy and get out from under that winter cloud that we've been having the last couple of weeks.
But I feel like you never know, because even though it might be pretty, we may have a snowstorm. You never know.
You never know.
So, and, yeah.
Speaking of which, and even though it's not our topic today, we're gonna talk mostly about stress and exercise and dealing with stress. You do get into that seasonal affective disorder that you hear people talk a lot about, and I by no means am an expert on that, but I can tell you that from the end of November until mid February, until Major League Baseball players report for spring training, I go through a little depression. I feel like I'm starting to come out of it now that pitchers and catchers are reporting on Friday. So now that baseball season is getting started up, I guess you could tell that my background is more baseball than anything else. But I'm starting to get excited again. A little happy.
Awesome. Yeah, well, we've got a really great show planned today, talking about stress and this time of year with midterms specifically, and maybe also the stress of spring break coming up. I know a lot of students are trying to hit the rec, hit the gym, trying to get beach body ready for spring break, and that can be a bit stressful, especially when you only have a couple of weeks to go. Thinking about realistic expectations and what should you do, what shouldn't you do, and then specifically just talking with a guest today about some different outlets to relieve stress.
Yeah, and you know, in any person's life, regardless of how old you are, there's so many different types of stress, and as it gets categorized and you start looking at the different types of stress. I mean, we know that people have major life stressors, and most of you that are starting your second semester at the University of Alabama, just moving away from home is a major life stress. And, you know, that's one big category. There's several that are out there, but, you know, daily life hassles, those small daily things that you go through can cause stress in a person's life. But as you get into categorizing different types of stress, which we'll talk more about later on individually, scientists have actually categorized college as a stressor in and of itself. And there are so many, even though all of those things can fall into different areas, it's, you know, college in and of itself can be such a stressor for so many people.
Right. And even just, you know, that change from being at home with your parents and moving away, and then even just getting to class, trying to figure out, how am I going to get across campus? Am I going to walk? Am I going to make it to my next class? Am I going to use the Crimson Ride? That can create stress, a lot of unnecessary stress that if we just kind of think things through, we can work around it. And I think that's what, you know, we're going to really touch on today is, you know, finding the time to exercise and have physical activity, so that we can relieve that stress and have some positive benefits, you know, relieving stress. So, but yeah, we're going to come back and we're going to bring a guest on with us a little bit later on. And you're listening to 90.7 The Capstone. This is Fit to Be Tied with Whitney and John, and we'll catch you after the break.
Hey, what's up? This is Ham Bagby, and you're listening to WVUA 90.7, The Capstone.
And welcome back to Fit to Be Tied with Whitney and John on 90.7 The Capstone. We are talking about stress.
Yes, and so many different things to talk about, and so a lot of different areas that we could go into. But we wanted to be kind of straightforward with this and dealing almost directly with the stressors that college students face. And when we say that term stressors out there, we know that most people know a stressor is anything that is going to cause you stress. When we look at it from a physiological perspective, and that being my background, just a quick quick background on what happens within the body when we experience something that stresses us. We have the autonomic nervous system, which is the part of the nervous system that is completely out of our control. There are some things that we can do to kind of preset it. But for the most part, our autonomic nervous system is out of our control. And it's basically made up of two components, your sympathetic and parasympathetic. And within your body at any given time, those two parts of your nervous system are battling each other, and whichever part is winning that battle is what you're going to feel. If the sympathetic part of your nervous system, automatic nervous system, is kind of in control when you experience something that stresses you, it's going to get hyped up a little bit and kind of take control, and you're going to have to depend on your parasympathetic to bring you back down. And so that's kind of our short-term response. If you experience things on a long-term basis and it continues, you get kind of that same response, maybe at a lower level, and it's more of an endocrine response. Your endocrine glands release hormones that cause things to happen, and by those things that happen, and when I say that about your autonomic nervous system and the sympathetic being in control, what we're looking at are things like... It's things that we commonly feel when we feel stress. Mm-hmm. When your heart rate goes up, you start to sweat. Mm-hmm. Everybody's heard of the fight or flight response. That's right. Exactly what it is. It prepares you to protect yourself. Mm-hmm. And in today's society, it's not really acceptable to do those things to protect yourself. And you look at what college students go through on a daily basis, when your heart rate gets up, you start breathing, your breathing rate goes up, you start breathing deeper, you start sweating. It's not going to do you a lot of good to start screaming and running around the room.
Well, I don't know. It may get you a better grade.
It very well may get you a better grade. But there are probably better ways to handle it. And, one of the ways, I mean, lots of things that are out there. We're going to talk about how to deal with it through nutrition later on. But, Whitney, you have a lot of classes. When we talk about the autonomic nervous system and the sympathetic and parasympathetic, some of the classes that you offer are ways to help you control your sympathetic nervous system, slowing down your heart rate, keeping your blood pressure down, and things like that. Do you want to talk a little bit about some of those classes and how they help you?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think for sure when you look at the mind-body classes that we offer yoga and mat Pilates and even a fusion class called Yoga Pilates where we combine the two. Really, that's going to be calming down your breath and your mind. The whole focus of those practices is to be present in the moment, to not stress about the past or stress about the future. It's learning to take the Western society that we all live in and kind of sift through all the things that we have to go through on a daily basis. So just kind of having that time to sit, chill, and relax. And then you are getting the exercise side of it, the stretching, the strength, things like that. But a lot of our students, they'll do yoga and they'll do Pilates, but a lot of them like the cardio and strength classes because it's then releasing some endorphins, making them feel better, and it's taking their mind off of the test they got to take tomorrow. They can do the class with their friends. So we offer, both sides of it, the stress relieving with the breathing and yoga and Pilates, and then we also offer that community aspect of just get out, come take a class. Just hang out with us. We're fun. Right. At least I think so.
And those classes are great. They really are. I mean, when you come out of a class, you see people walking into class and they have their mats under their arm and they're walking fast and they're trying to get to class, and then they come back out and they look so relaxed.
They do. It's almost like that stress of trying to get to class, they don't even care about that anymore. I mean, they're going to get there, but they're not so stressed about it.
Right. And going to a class like that, you get immediate benefits. You come out and your heart rate's slower, your breathing rate's slower, you just feel more relaxed and confident. But if you continue with those classes over a long period of time, mm-hmm. chances are, and you combine that with cardiovascular training and strength training and things like that, you get a lower resting heart rate, you get lower blood pressure, you get a lower response to stress, mm-hmm. basically.
You may even come off some medicine. I don't know.
Yeah, it's always a possibility.
Yeah.
It really is. And we've had personal training clients that have done that over
right.
the years. It really does make a difference. And what is exercise? It's a stressor. If you think about what happens to your body as you start to exercise, you start to sweat, your heart rate goes up, your breathing rate goes up, your blood pressure goes up. It's the same thing, but what happens is there are probably better ways to say it, but you're basically stressing your body at low levels and you desensitize yourself to stress. And so with a lower resting heart rate and all of those things being in better condition, when you encounter something that does stress you, you know, maybe your heart rate doesn't go up as much because you're used to exercising. You're used to that release of epinephrine, norepinephrine, mm-hmm. what people used to call adrenaline, noradrenaline.
Right.
And so your body's actually used to that, and it doesn't affect you as harshly as if you don't exercise.
True. Yeah. Well, we do have a special guest with us today, Stephanie Summers. She's getting her master's in Spanish linguistics. I think I said all that right. Is that right, Stephanie?
Yes, it is. Hi, everyone. Thank you for having me on this show.
Yeah. And Stephanie is one of our group exercise participants. I see her all the time in yoga, in DAZE, which is our cardio dance class. And we just brought her on so that we could kind of pick her brain a little bit as to why she comes to our classes. And she's also in training to become an instructor. This has kind of impacted her. So kind of, you know, tell us what you like about classes. I mean, just kind of a, you know.
Okay, so I've been trying out classes since undergrad, but I really clung on to it my last semester here when I took a Zumba class and a yoga class as credit. Having to go to class every week, it motivated me to try out other classes is actually how I started going to DAZE. And then at first, you know, you get really nervous, you don't know the dances, you want to stand in the back. But after you go, after a couple of weeks, you just feel a difference, you get more comfortable. And for me, it motivated me to go to the other classes. So instead of it just being just a workout class, it started being fun. I like to dance. I feel like I'm actually kind of okay at it.
You're good.
Yeah. So it just, I don't know. I started seeing a difference in how I felt, not necessarily how I looked. But after doing it for weeks on weeks on weeks, I started seeing a difference in my body and how I had more energy every day. I didn't want to go home right after class and take a nap. And so that motivated me to do more of the yoga side because I took a health class my junior semester, one of those semesters. And one of the things I remember from that is working out is not just getting your heart rate up, getting your heart rate going. It's also having a balance between your mind and your body. And so that's what I find in yoga is being able to go to a class, lay down on a mat, let go of everything. It sounds weird at first. You're laying on a mat and you're thinking to yourself, I'm going to be sitting here for a whole hour and I have to listen to myself talk in my head. No, after a while you get comfortable and you really start to get into it and you lose yourself in the workout. And after the hour or so, you really just feel relaxed and like you can conquer the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's all. Well, and especially with yoga, I think a lot of students are a little bit nervous to try yoga because it is so quiet and it is about you have to lay there with your thoughts and what's going on in your head. And people have a lot of stuff going on in their head. I mean, we've already talked about, you know, schoolwork, trying to get to class. I mean, anything you can think of. So, I mean, you're right. It is kind of weird at first trying to go in there and do it. But once you get into the habit and the routine, it's something that you kind of can't live without. So, yeah, I think that's awesome. And specifically with like cardio classes, do you feel a certain way when you're done? I mean, do you feel like, I know you said you can conquer the world, but just briefly.
The way I feel after I get done with a cardio class feels like I have energy to do like to spend hours on hours sitting there and looking at a Spanish book that I know it will take me hours to read one chapter. It gives me the motivation to not just go home and fall asleep. I'm awake. I'm alive.
Yeah. And I think that's awesome. And we're going to talk more about that after the break. Again, you're listening to Fit to Be Tied with Whitney and John on 90.7 The Capstone.
This is AC.
I'm Burnham.
I'm Davis.
This is Casey.
And I'm Josh, and we're Mother Funk. You're listening to 90.7 The Capstone. Stay funky, Tuscaloosa.
Welcome back to Fit to Be Tied with Whitney and John. You're listening to us on 90.7 WVUA, the Capstone. And we have our special guest with us for the next segment, Miss Stephanie Summers, who is here to talk to us a little bit about some of our group exercise class and her participation in those classes and how they help relieve her stress. And one of the things that I wanted to ask you, Stephanie, just as a college student, What are some of the common things that, if you had to, you know, list your top two or three things that cause stress in your life as a college student, what would you say those things are?
The top three, definitely presentations. I hate getting in front of a classroom and trying to present an idea because I never exactly know. That just stresses me out, having to plan for it, the time management and preparing for it, and then actually having to get up in front of the class. That's always stressful. Just making it to class sometimes is pretty stressful, depending on how late I go to sleep the night before, how early I have to get up the morning after, and then fighting through the traffic, finding a parking spot. That in and of itself is pretty stressful as well. And then I would say having to write papers.
Right.
Past time, right. That procrastinating in general, thinking right. That you have, oh, I have enough time. And then the hours before it's due, you sit down, you're like, oh, I have to write a 15-page paper in 3 hours.
Right.
What am I going to do?
And you basically hit on some of the things that we were talking about earlier, you know, those major life events, getting up and giving a presentation. That's a big event for a lot of people. And it's not fun talking in front of crowds. I think that's the number one. Is that the number one fear that people face?
I will dance and teach in front of a class, but you have me just talk.
Yeah.
There's no way.
But between that and, you know, the other things that you mentioned, the daily life hassles, trying to find a parking place and get to class on time is difficult and not fun. And, you know, the way you approach dealing with those different types of stressors requires different methods on your part. The last thing you mentioned was, you know, getting things done in a timely manner. The time management that is required of a college student. So you look at all different types of things right there, and there are so many different ways to handle it. How do you handle all of those things and then work in your group exercise classes that you like so much?
Okay, so I guess I am the type of student that I overload myself, but I do so in a way that I'm busy at all times. So what I have to do is I separate my different schedules and I write it all down. And then, because I'm not the type of person who can just go and run for hours. I don't like the cardio machines.
Right.
I like to lift weights, but I don't really know what to do. So the group exercise classes really gives me an opportunity to go and work out in a way that I know I'm not going to hurt myself because I'm watching someone do it and I'm following something and I'm still getting a workout in. So I sit my schedule down that I wrote down and then I compare it to the schedules that are listed on the website. And I just find two or three or four classes that I can fit into my schedule a week. And I make myself go to those classes even when I'm tired or exhausted and don't feel like waking up. I make myself go because at the end I know I'm going to feel so much better after this.
Right.
So kind of going along with how you work it in your schedule, I know a lot of people say, well, I can't go to the rec. It's too crowded. It's too busy. I can't get into a class. What kind of advice do you have for them? Because I've seen you in every single one of our classes at the busiest times, and you just somehow, you just work it right. I mean, what kind of advice can you give them?
So during the spring semester especially, I feel like a lot more students, there's a lot more traffic and trying to get into the classes. And what I do is I just work it into my schedule where I have at least 15 minutes before the 30-minute mark to get the pass to make sure that I am inside that building in the line if there is a line for passes or even just sitting around. I'll bring a book if I'm bored, but I'd make sure that I give myself at least 45 minutes before the class starts. So that way, if you're there at least 45 minutes before you're pretty much guaranteed to get a pass.
Yeah. And I think one thing I see a lot of the students doing, and even faculty, staff, and community members that are trying to get into classes, they make the most of their time. So, like, if I do need to get there 45 minutes before the class, well, then I'm going to bring my schoolwork. And so I'm just going to sit there, and at least I'm not sitting there stressing, okay, I should be doing my work. At least I have my work with me. Or, you know, bringing a friend and having that time if you don't want to work on schoolwork. What other advice, say I'm a student and I really want to try the class of the rec, but I'm kind of nervous. Like, what's advice that you could give that student?
So I would say look at the board. There are descriptions for each of the classes on the Group X board. Look and see what sounds interesting. Like I said, I'm not the type of person to go running outside, but I know I like to dance. I know that I'm decently okay at it. Find something that you think might work for you. If you're a first-time student, don't try to go to a high-intensive class because it's going to be hard for you. Just find something that you think you might like. Try it out. If anything, it's only an hour or 30 minutes that you're taking up. Try different things out. See what you like. See what works. It's not going to always be great after the first time, but.
Yeah, and I think that's good advice. Just there's a class for everyone out there, and it's my advice is always give a class 3 tries, because the first try, you're not really sure what's going on. Second try, maybe you're kind of a little bit more into it, and then third try, it's like, I got this. I can do this. So, yeah, I think that's great. Do you have any other words of advice for anybody that's looking to try a class, or any recommendations of classes?
I would definitely recommend taking the time to think about what you want to do. I always go to the days classes. If you ever go and you see some short Hispanic girl dancing in the front row, that's probably me.
Just or on stage, because I do put you on stage.
Yes, or on stage. Just find something that you think that you feel is going to make you feel better. Or just is going to be fun. You don't have to do it because you think you're going to be good at it. Just something that sounds like fun. Or just go and try a yoga class. Yoga is not the easiest thing to do at first, but just trying something different, trying out something. You never know what you're good at until you try it.
Do you feel like when you've gone to these classes, or when you've noticed like new people going to classes, that the instructors are pretty open, or do they feel, is there a sense of like everyone can do it, or do you feel like people might get, you know, kind of turned off, or what's the overall feeling of the class?
Overall, I always get a feeling that the instructors are very open. They're welcome to any questions or comments after the class. You can ask them anything, talk to them about anything. A lot of them are just, they have really great personalities, and the class, they make the class something more than even what you get out of just working out. And I think that's another thing that's so great about the Group X classes is that no matter who you go to, you're always going to have a great experience, or as far as I've ever had, I've always had a great experience. And I don't know, it's always a lot of fun.
Awesome. Well, good deal. And I guess it's kind of the same way. And JJ, I don't know about you too, but even with the trainers, having somebody there that you can kind of count on, that's, you know, going to give you the motivation, even like group training, right, things like that, or just some friends. And sometimes, you know, we think about, I need to go exercise. Well, again, do something that you enjoy. It doesn't have to be running 5 miles, because I don't like to run. But I mean, it can be something like, I'm just going to go walk around the mall, you know, just physical activity, right, getting out.
And, you know, two things that you mentioned, that was a lot of great information. Thank you for that. Two things that you mentioned that really, really jumped out at me. The first thing was having somebody to watch and know, I mean, whether, you know, whether it's having a trainer to teach you how to do things and make sure that you're doing things correctly, or having a group exercise instructor that is demonstrating it so that you know that you're doing things right, I think is super important. And I didn't count the number of times that you said fun, but that's what Whitney and I preach all the time. Exercise has got to be fun, and or physical activity in general. We want people to just get up and get moving and do things like that. And that's what's going to make you healthier. It's not always about weight loss or looking better, that sort of thing, even though that's a side effect of it a lot of times, a good side effect. But we so highly encourage people to have to look around, look at all the options that they have, and try to find things that they have fun. Wouldn't you say, Whitney?
I think so. I think as long as you can find something you enjoy and stick with it, you're doing good. Well, Stephanie, thank you so much for being here with us today and talking about you know, how you relieve stress and just some options that are out there. And we're going to take a quick break. And you are listening to Fit to Be Tied with Whitney and John on 90.7 The Capstone.
This is Rachel
McDuck.
Bridget
Calabrese
from Lake Street Dive.
And you're listening to 90.7 The Capstone. Roll Tide!
Welcome back to Fit to Be Tied with Whitney and John. This is John, and we are continuing our discussion today on stress. And this is our segment that we usually bring in our expert dietitian. Sheena Gregg is here to talk to us about some things about nutrition and stress. And I'm just going to turn it over to her and let her talk for a little bit and about her thoughts related to nutrition and stress. And I also have a few questions I'd like to throw at you, too.
Okay, perfect. And again, John and Whitney, thank you for having me back as your trusty nutrition correspondent and dietitian at the Student Health Center. And you know, it's funny thinking about stress and the college student, because when you think of those topics, you usually start to think about how that affects somebody's appetite, whether you have folks that have a lower appetite when they're stressed out, or they feel like they could eat themselves out of house or home when they're stressed out. And when I was thinking about this topic today, I was thinking, who could I talk to about being a stressed out student? Who is someone who is overly involved on our campus in a very good way? And I actually brought one of my students today from our department in health promotion wellness, Mr. Daniel Kennedy. He is a second year Avanti orientation leader, a public relations major. And Daniel, thank you for coming on with us today and tell me a little bit more about some of the other things that you're involved with on campus.
So I was in Avanti my freshman year here, and then this year I'm a student coordinator of orientation and special programming on campus. So that's a lot of time committed to there. I also work for the Department of Health Promotion and Wellness there as a student worker, take a full workload. I try to be involved as possible on campus because I'm from Chicago, so I try to make the most time I have out here as possible.
Yeah, and so when you think about your involvement during just even the regular fall and spring semesters, and even what that schedule is looks like during the summer with Bama Bound orientation, have you noticed during your time here at the university how stress has affected your appetite, or even just food choices in general?
Yeah, especially during the times where there's a lot of work coming in at one time. I don't really try to focus on my food intake just because I want to focus on my work first, get all my responsibilities done, and then maybe if I take like a 5-minute break, I'll just kind of eat whatever's in front of me, because it's more of like a stress reliever to eat at that point rather than just, oh, I'm going to focus on what to eat then. These are my meals, etc.
Mm-hmm. No, and you know, it's funny you mentioned, you know, picking the foods that you want to eat or crave versus what may be better for you. And I know, John, you and I were talking during the break, and you said you had some questions. Kind of tell me what you would like to pick my brain about.
Well, yeah, looking at it from a physiological standpoint, you know, one of the things, Daniel, you mentioned how you don't eat as much when you're stressed, and I'm actually the same way. And you see so many people that when they're going through stress and stressful situations, one of their ways of coping with it is to do whatever they're doing, but eat a lot as well. When I do have those rare occasions when I'm stressed and I do want to eat, I have my comfort food, and people always think of comfort food as sitting on the couch eating ice cream or things like that. I will sit on the couch and eat mashed potatoes all day long. I don't know what it is. It probably goes back to my childhood somewhere. But from a physiological standpoint, on a more serious note, eating foods like that actually comfort you while you're in times of stress, is there really anything to that physiologically?
I think there definitely is, because when students come into the office to see me and they have a very stressful lifestyle, it's very rare that they're coming into the office upset, saying that late at night when they're stressed out that they were craving carrots and celery. It's usually going to be more of your high octane foods, some of your higher calorie foods, what we would traditionally deem as comfort foods, like you mentioned with those mashed potatoes. And the body definitely has a method to the madness when it does that, because what your body does during those stressful reactions is it starts to think of foods that that you enjoy the most to release those endorphins. It creates reactions in your brain that help you basically diminish that feeling of stress, so you can kind of almost go in an area of your mind where you're not thinking about the stress as much. So it lets you kind of separate yourself from that stress. And there was an article in Harvard Medical School's Harvard Health Publications lately that mentioned that. And it says here specifically that once ingested, fat and sugar-filled foods seem to have a feedback effect that inhibits activity in the brain that produces and processes stress and related emotions. So they really are comfort foods that people have. And so when your body is used to having that type of body reaction from, say, mashed potatoes, or mine would be ice cream, your body is going to automatically go to that as an automatic response in any kind of similar stressful reaction.
So there really is a direct correlation between eating those foods and reducing your stress levels.
There definitely is. That's not saying that that should be your go-to item every single
Absolutely.
Time, especially if you live a healthy lifestyle. And, you know, as we think about this, when I think about stress, I tend to think about the jargon emotional hunger. When I work with students in my office, I like to give a lot of tips on really deciphering between emotional and physical hunger. And just in the amount of time that we have left, I wanted to share some of those traits. And one of the things that's really interesting about emotional hunger is that emotional hunger is typically sudden. So 1 minute you're not thinking about food, you know, y'all are fine in the office, and then John and Whitney, somebody comes in the office and they've got some hot now donuts ready to go. You weren't thinking about donuts about 30 minutes ago, but all of a sudden it's very, very sudden. So your hunger goes from 0 to 60 in a very short period of time. So when you're thinking about that as being emotional hunger, physical hunger is going to be more so gradual. It's going to be the type of hunger that really starts in your stomach area. Your tummy starts to growl. And when you think about emotional hunger, it is going to be the type of hunger where you feel like you've got to eat something in the next 30 to 40 seconds, or you might punch somebody in the face. Like, you're like, okay, I'm going to go to the vending machine and grab something because I'm very, very hungry. That can be usually paired with some type of stressful event, whether you're stressed out about a test or you have some type of anxiety, whereas physical hunger is going to be, again, more gradual. You have about 30 to 40 minutes to think about eating something. You kind of get those tummy rumbles and you start thinking, okay, if I can get something in the next 30 to 40 minutes, I should be good. So it gives you that time to think of a more appropriate food choice in that situation. So I think it's nice to be able to decipher between some of those different characteristics when you think about emotional and physical hunger. Another thing that I always like to tell people too is that emotional hunger is usually for a very specific food. So your cravings are going to be for one specific type of food, whether it's chocolate or pasta or a cheeseburger. With emotional eating, you feel like you have to eat that exact food. There's not going to be a substitute. But if you're physically hungry, your appetite is going to be more so open to a variety of foods. You might have a little bit of a preference, but it's not going to be so specific. So when you're in a situation and you think you're feeling hungry, I will tell students to try something called the apple test, or it could be any fruit that they actually like. So you could be sitting there thinking, okay, I'm getting hungry. Would an apple suffice my hunger at this point? If the answer is no, then it's probably more emotional based, where you're wanting something specific, like some type of high octane candy or chocolate or whatever else. But if you are okay with getting your hunger out of the way by having that apple or whatever your favorite fruit is, then you probably are more so physically hungry. Another thing that can be helpful to keep in mind is also that hydration intake when you're stressed out. Being dehydrated can exacerbate those stress-filled emotions and anxiety. So making sure that you are staying hydrated throughout the day is very helpful. The body will sometimes mimic a feeling of hunger when it's actually thirsty. So I will tell students to make sure that they are drinking regularly throughout the day. If they've just eaten a meal or just eaten a snack, and then about 10 or 15 minutes later they're feeling hungry again, go for that bottle of water and see if that water takes care of that hungry feeling. If that water has nipped that feeling in the bud, it was probably more of a hydration issue than a hunger issue. So there's definitely a lot of factors that are involved when you think about emotional and physical hunger.
I'm glad you answered that question about the water, because I wanted to ask you that, but I thought it was probably like a third grade question, but you always hear that, you know.
You definitely do, and you know, I think we do think about water intake, especially if you're participating in those group exercise classes and you're just active in general. But for a lot of our students, we drink a lot of caffeine, whether it's from coffee drinks, energy drinks, and those are natural diuretics, so they make us use the restroom all the time. So we're getting dehydrated from that. So you want to make sure, you know, huge takeaway point from this afternoon is if you can stay consistently hydrated, that can definitely help when you think about trying to keep at bay any kind of stress hunger cues that happen throughout the week. But again, this is Sheena Soundbites, a part of Fit to Be Tied with Whitney and John, and we'll catch you after the break.
Young Love.
This is Paul Janeway of St. Paul and the Broken Bones, and you're listening to 90.7 The Capstone.
And we are back. This is Fit to Be Tied with Whitney and John on 90.7 The Capstone. And we've got a few frequently asked questions that we just kind of pulled out of a hat that we normally will get asked. And the first question I've got for you, JJ, is, should I work out when I'm sore?
And this is a question that we get all of the time. There's a lot of research out there on that, but and I've been to so many conferences, and it's kind of crazy that the first research project that is ever brought up is kind of a landmark study now, even though it only occurred probably, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago. John McCluster, who was a student here at the University of Alabama, conducted a research study in our student recreation center. And what he looked at was, what is the optimal time to lift weights after you've lifted again? And, you know, a lot of people say you always want to take at least that, you know, that 1 day break, 2 day break. What he found out in his research was you're at your optimal strength after about 72 hours. So if you've worked a body part and that body part is still sore, if it never gets sore, you know, maybe you didn't overload it enough to get the benefits that you need to get. But even if you are sore, you should probably start to come down off of that between 68 and 72 hours. So you're looking at about that amount of time before you would want to work that same body part again. Now, when you start looking at group exercise classes and working different body parts together, you have to just kind of take all that into consideration in how you're planning your workout. But you know, I would say that's the optimal workout time, and so many factors go into that. Things that Sheena's talked about as it relates to nutrition can maybe speed that time up a little bit. If you don't eat properly, it can extend that time a little bit. But ideally, to answer that question, if first off, you have to determine whether are you sore or are you hurting? Or is it a joint pain, or are your muscles actually sore? But once you start to recover, what we really tell people is if you're still sore, you might want to wait a little bit longer until you're actually over that. But that is a question that we get really a lot. And I have a question for you guys. It's actually more of a statement. And we brought Stephanie back for this just to get the take on from both of you. A statement that we hear so much at University Recreation is that group exercise is for girls, is for females. And to be quite honest, historically, our numbers have kind of, they bear that out. And that's something that we've done campaigns in the past, and our participation by males has actually increased. You get guys in there and they actually have fun, and there's so many benefits to doing group exercise. I mean, right. And we've talked about those over some of our shows, but I just wanted to ask you guys, why do you think there is that misperception about why guys shouldn't do, or why they don't do group exercise?
I kind of think it goes back to way back in the day, maybe 1985, I don't know, when you had jazzercise, you had step aerobics, which we still do step aerobics. And I think there's that mindset that, okay, going to a group fitness class is just for girls because of the music, it's possibly dancing. And really, we only have one class that's a dance class. I'll get some guys to come into a hard core class, which is our strength class for core muscles, and they think it's one of the hardest classes they've done because they're just missing a little information, and we're able to provide that. So I think it kind of is just a mindset that's been around for a while, and we do have a lot more male participation, and we primarily will see more guys coming to yoga and cycling classes. Those are our heaviest, I guess, male participation classes. But I see guys in every single class we have. I just, you know, we got to break that stigma. What do you think, Stephanie?
I think another thing, too, is that they think that it's not going to be a workout for them. Like, I've seen a group of guys come just as a joke to days. And then after the first third or fourth song, you just see them and their hands on their knees panting and sweating like I've never seen anybody work out before. So I think part of it is that they just don't think that they're going to get a good workout when in reality, it doesn't matter if you're a girl or a guy, just having – bringing your heart rate up is going to make you have a good workout.
And what's kind of funny is as instructors, we kind of crack up. Like if we have, you know, a guy that looks like maybe they've never come to a group X class before, it's like we kind of make it our mission. Like, okay, this is going to be a workout. And then it usually, I mean, they're always a workout, but we just kind of have that little extra edge. Like we're really going to make this a workout today. So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely not just for girls.
Well, when you talk about stress and Stephanie, you mentioned time management being an issue. When you look at the traditional way of working out, you know, you do your weights, you do your cardio. If you're smart, you do your flexibility as well. And one of the beauties of group exercise is you can go to one class and you can get all three of those mm-hmm. components, muscular strength and muscular endurance. So four out of the five components that you're looking at for fitness in an hour. So to me, it makes all the sense in the world to, if you're designing a workout plan for yourself, to make one or two of those days a group X day, because you're accomplishing so much in a short amount of time and it's so many of those things that you actually want to do. So, that you actually need to do. And so I think it's just a great thing to incorporate into your regular workout plan. And I know you guys know that as well. Lots of benefits from doing that. So last question for you, Whitney, and it's one that we see a lot. We get a lot of requests for at the rec center. We have people come in asking, do we have TVs and VCR so that they can come in and do a P90X video or do a video that they bought off of an infomercial late at night? You know, what are your thoughts on people doing videos and exercise programs like that?
I think it kind of goes back to what we talked about a few weeks ago, looking at your goals and your fitness level. I think sometimes those infomercials can be a little bit misleading, because if I'm someone that doesn't know anything about fitness and I see an infomercial and somebody tells me, hey, you do this, you're going to get ripped and cut, well, I'm going to buy it. And then I'm probably going to get hurt because I don't have a base level to work with. I don't think they're at all bad. I just think that if you're going to go into something like that, you need to maybe have the fundamentals first. Kind of like what we talked about with CrossFit last week, just making sure that you're not going to jump into something that you're going to get hurt and then you're going to be out 6 weeks and you can't work out at all. And I mean, I like, you know, some of those programs. We specifically don't offer them at the rec because of turnover and instructors, and so we keep things very broad so that when we train people, we can train in those types of activities. That's one of the reasons why we don't offer specific named type programs, but coming up with or having a strong base is the most important part, so you don't get hurt.
Right. Yeah. And it's kind of like you say, it all goes back to how smart you are about jumping into it, because there are lots of good things that are out there.
Yeah.
They're going to cost you some money, and
that's the other thing.
But you get, you know, as Stephanie mentioned earlier, you get that leadership. You get somebody to watch
right.
while you're doing it. The important things, and one of the things that I've noticed over the years that your instructors do such a great job of is they teach to the mainstream, but they offer advanced moves
right.
and they offer beginner moves as well. And, you know, I don't have a ton of experience with, you know, all of the exercise videos that are offered out there on those types of things, but you don't necessarily know whether or not you're going to get that if you're buying
right.
something. So going at it really hardcore from the beginning, you're risking injury. Mm-hmm. And risking injury when you're starting an exercise program is probably one of the last things that you want to do. You get the motivation up to start working out. You get in there and you start doing it and you start to feeling good, and then you get hurt.
It's a downer.
Yeah, it really is. Which is a nice segue into what we're actually going to talk about next week.
Yeah.
We are our guest next week is going to be some healthcare professionals that are going to our main topic, I would say, is going to be dealing with athletic injuries, trying to the prevention of athletic mm-hmm. injuries and that sort of thing, and hopefully we can bring some good information on how to avoid those types of things.
Right. Well, good deal. So we have been talking a lot about stress, so don't get stressed out. This has been a really great show, and we hope that you'll listen in next week. This is Fit to be Tied with Whitney and John on 90.7 The Capstone. Roll Tide.